You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I'm your host, as always, Damon Martin, and this week I am happy to be joined by the man with the most wins in UFC history. He is also now the owner of a blistering 23-second knockout, which I learned on Saturday night's his fastest finish. It actually beats the Clay Guida finish from a couple years ago. It is always my pleasure to speak to the legend himself, Jim Miller, or should I say Jim Effing Miller, as I always call him. Jim, what's going on?
Not too much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Congratulations, of course, on another amazing win. I know you can't predict how fights are going to play out, but could you have pictured a more better way to win a fight on Saturday night?
Not really. No. Yeah. You know, that was that was a good one.
I mean, listen, you've had lots of impressive finishes. I mentioned right there, like, you've had a lot of fast finishes, a lot of first round finishes, but 23 seconds. I mean, you can't, like I said, you're not getting paid by the hour.
That's right. Yeah. You know, that it was almost too fast, right? Because it's like you come out and you're like, oh, man, like, well, I guess that's it right now. I guess we're done for the night.
So let's backtrack, because this past week, the fight week for you is pretty insane in and of itself, because a couple weeks ago, of course, Ludovic Klein was the guy you're fighting. He falls out. Mm-hmm. They replace him with Jared Gordon. So you're fighting Jared Gordon. Good matchup. Jared's a veteran, seemed like a fun fight, but there was a little initial concern about, you know, would he be ready? He obviously suffered through a pretty nasty fight with Bobby Green. Mm-hmm. All those things are going, you show up fight week and we hear right away, like, fight's canceled. So can you give me just a timeline, like how your fight week went leading to actually getting to Jesse Butler?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, when Jared's name was first presented to me, I immediately asked, I was like, is everything cool? Cause I knew, you know, I knew he took the headbutt, and regardless, whether the fight getting overturned to a no contest, it doesn't affect what happened inside the octagon that night. My worries were met with like, hey, everything's good to go. We asked, everything's, you know, golden, because my options at that point were, you know, we had a couple different names thrown out there, or it was wait for Klein until like mid July. So if Jared had fallen through, I was probably going to end up, you know, waiting another couple weeks to fight. You know, and then there was also like, okay, if I'm waiting another couple of weeks, I've been training my butt off for the last, you know, four or five weeks. If I have another 6 weeks, I kind of got to pull up and take it easy for, you know, a week or two and then get back into the grind. So I really wanted to know. you know, then we come into fight week and, it was, Thursday, Thursday morning. I like go down to get my meals from the PI staff. And, you know, my phone starts buzzing in my pocket and I pull it out. And of course it's the name you don't want to see, you know, during fight week. And that's Sean Shelby's name. So, I think I immediately started cursing before I even picked up the phone. And, it's like, hey, he's out. Do you want me to find somebody else? And I was like, absolutely, let's do it. I'm here. So fortunately we were able to find, you know, Jesse in a couple hours, and things hopped right back into hopped right back on track, and we got everything done.
Yeah. Let me ask, you mentioned when they first offered you Jared Gordon, because I know you said this, even in the pre-fight, like there was a little concern because of how his last fight ended with the knockout and everything. When you talked to the UFC, the UFC had said, because this is what the timeline a lot of people are curious about. The UFC told you they had asked him specifically if he was good to go, like he was healthy and ready to go. Yep. That's what you were made to understand, correct?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So when, because like obviously like Dana White came out on Saturday, a lot of people are kind of upset that he's like, you know, the blame falls on Jared Gordon, because I guess, you know, again, it's the fighter's job to disclose when you're not able to fight. Now, obviously, we all know, Jim, I know, you know, we all know well enough, fighters go into every fight injured. You're not going to tell every single injury. But with something like that, like, listen, you're a pretty even keel guy. I know you don't necessarily get any, but were you upset or angry at all that he did accept the fight knowing that he had a concussion? Because in my estimation, if he had never said that during media day, he would have fought on Saturday night. Like, he made it public, and that's what doomed it.
Yeah, I think that's what ended up happening. You know, sometimes you go through the medicals, like after a fight, right? You know, you get to the tent in the back, and sometimes you're not fully really like showing signs of concussions or anything like that, or even injuries, right? Like, this is actually a conversation I've had with the doctors on quite a few occasions. Like, you're taking us when we are still like high on adrenaline, you know, like we're still hearts pumping at a mile a minute. Like, I mean, we are still in fight mode, and you're asking us like if things hurt or this or that, and it's hard for us to like fully assess you know what exactly is going on. So from what my understanding is that he didn't really feel like he had a concussion until like, you know, a week or so later. So then it is kind of on him, like, hey, maybe you should have vocalized that to people. But, you know, like I said, you know, post fight, like I understand him doing it. I understand him taking the fight. I mean, it's kind of reckless. But we get paid to step into a age, the tar out of each other. Right. I'm disappointed with his team. You know, like if one of my teammates, you know, one of my guys was in that same situation, there's absolutely no fucking way that I let them take a fight under those circumstances. Combining a massive weight cut with like actively getting over a concussion, it's not good. That's not a good play. So for his coaches and his manager to just brush that off and like, okay, we got this. You know, I think it's kind of reckless. And it's like, I mean, I get it that the idea and the mentality is that like, they see my name, they're like, ah, we're going to beat the shit out of Jim. You know, we're going to knock him out. Right. Like that's, hey, you gotta be confident. Right. But how many guys that have beaten me have gotten out of the fight, not getting hit, you know,
yeah.
Unless he thinks he's going to take me down on the first striking exchange, slam me, my shoulder's going to separate, and then he's going to have the jiu-jitsu skill of the most prolific submission artist in the UFC's history, you know, on my back. Like, that's the only time somebody's fought me and beat me and not gotten hit. Like, I've beaten guys and not hit them. But like, nobody's beaten me and not, except for the one fight with Charles Oliveira. Like, that's it. So yeah, like, you have to like look at it like, hey, we don't want to get into a firefight right now, but you're fighting me. Like, yeah, I don't have a ton of knockouts on my resume, but I'm still going to hit you.
Yeah, you don't.
You might hit me back, but I'm still going to hit you.
You don't walk out of a fight with Jim Miller without taking a little bit of damage. That's kind of like the story. Like, you may even win. There may be a chance somebody beat you, but they're not going to walk out the same as they walked in.
Exactly. So it's you know, if I was just some like straight jiu-jitsu guy, like, I think it's a safer fight. You know, in that situation, in that, dealing with what he was dealing with. But like, I mean, it's not like I'm unknown. You know, it's not like there's no film on me. It's not like there isn't a mountain of data, you know, on what it's like to fight me. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I honestly, I know that like my, my jiu-jitsu coach and my Muay Thai coach would have been, they, you know, Amr and Brian, they would have made it apparent that they didn't want me to take the fight. You know, my strength and conditioning coach, Martin Rooney, and my nutritionist, Nick Berenger, they would have chewed my freaking ass off if I accepted a fight in that situation. Honestly, like, you know, like, Amr and Brian and I, we have more of like a brotherly relationship where Martin and Nick are like father figures, you know, so they would have scolded me for taking a fight, you know, while still getting over a concussion and having to cut nearly 40 pounds.
Yeah. Well, we always like his quote, and I like Jared, by the way. Jared's a good dude. Yeah. Like, it's nothing against him, but he said, and I read his quote before we did the interview today, and I was like, he said, minor concussion. I was like, there's no such thing as a minor concussion. Yeah. Like, concussions, like, we all know the story. You remember the story. TJ Grant, you know, incredible fighter, mm-hmm. gets a heel across the head during a jiu-jitsu practice, never fights again. There's no such thing as a minor concussion. Like, you have a concussion or you don't have a concussion. And we are still, like, in 2023, we are still kind of unknown about concussions, mm-hmm. how long they last, all those kind of things. And I've had a concussion from a car accident. I felt fine 2 days later, and then about a week later I started getting like vertigo and mm-hmm. headaches, and I couldn't be in the sun. Like, it was bizarre. Like, it didn't hit me until like a week later, and it was the weirdest, mm-hmm. freakiest feeling in the world. You can't go, and again, the reality, I mean, in a weird way, like, I'm glad he got pulled in that regard, because if you knock him out like you did Jesse Butler, we may be talking about some serious problems going on with Jared Gordon right now. But at the same time, you're right, it's irresponsible to tell the UFC, yes, I'm good to go, and then you show up and you disclose that. There's no way they're gonna let you fight. Like, there's no way you're gonna say, I had a minor concussion 6 weeks ago, and they're gonna be like, oh sure, go right ahead and fight.
Exactly. You know, yeah, it's as a fighter, you gotta be like supremely confident at times, right? Like, you have to. Yeah, that's the way you have to step into the octagon. But yeah, it's you're putting yourself in a really messed up situation. And like I said, like, to not have a couple voices, like, that's the part that stinks. Like, I wish it was, you know, there were people that talked him out of it, because, like, you know, this isn't a good look now, you know, and he's going to have to deal with that. But, like we as fighters, you know, and teams, like, we need to look out for our guys. We need to look out for, you know, the guys who are super willing, right, to risk it all. Somebody from his team should have been in his ear.
Yeah. Did you run into Jared at all after that, or did you see him after that? I assume not.
But... No, I didn't see him after that.
Yeah. So now in your case, you know, again, you're a fighter's fighter, Jim, but you get that call and they say, do you want a replacement? What did your coaches, there you go, talk about advice. What did your coaches say? Because there's a risk there. Yes, they're going to get a guy on 48 hours notice, but listen, this is a guy who's going to take a fight, going to try to live his UFC dream and make a debut fighting the freaking winningest fighter in UFC history. Of course, they're going to take that risk, because it's, I mean, yes, there's obviously, you know, I'm sure Jesse Butler wishes he hadn't got knocked down 23 seconds, but hey, he got in the UFC. He's going to get another fight. We know the UFC is going to keep him around because he stepped up, all those kind of things. But what was your, on your side? Because that's a risk for you.
It's definitely a risk. You know, you are fighting somebody that you don't really know as much about. Like I said, there's Jesse's been fighting for quite some time. He's been on the UFC's radar. I think his last fight was against a UFC vet that he ended up knocking out. He was right there. When you take some, put him in that situation, it's like, hey, there's nothing to lose. You know, it makes him a really dangerous opponent, you know? So, but like at this point, right, and the way that I train, like it doesn't matter, to me. Like, I'm, when I'm preparing for a fight, I'm trying to stay healthy. Is like number one, unfortunately. Number two is getting a really good shape. Number three is be as sharp as I can be, like, with the things that I'm good at. And then like the fourth and last thing is like, okay, what opportunities am I going to get in, you know, against a specific opponent? And what do I have to worry about? Right. Because like I train to close up the holes, right? I believe that my coaches shouldn't be able to like easily coach somebody to a win against me. Like you should be able to take my coaches, put them in the other guy's corner and give them a couple weeks. And like, if they're doing their job, when we're working together, they're minimizing the holes that I have in my game. So like, if they're just working around them, like, then that's an issue that I have with my guys, with my coaches. So like, yeah, I'm preparing to tighten everything up, to be as dangerous as I can be, and also to be as like hard to catch as I can be. So yeah, like, so to me, it's like, well, I've been training for, you know, 6 weeks to fight tonight and he hasn't. So I like those odds, you know, I like that opportunity.
Yeah. And to his credit, you know, knowing full well that, you know, listen, he hasn't really been training, going, you know, deep into a third round with a guy like yourself is probably a losing proposition. So he came out guns blazing, like he came out swinging. Yeah. Obviously a backfire, because when you backed him up, you caught him at that left hand. And, oh boy. Do you like when you, because obviously you've been in those wars, you know what it's like to go toe to toe with a guy, and sometimes you get the best of it, sometimes you get the worst of it. But when he comes out swinging, like you reacted very well and you recognized it very well. And when you hit that, like when you hit him with the left, obviously you followed up with the uppercut. Like, do you realize, or is it just all like reaction in that moment that you're just going until it's over because you hit him? There was so much impact. Like, do you know when you land that good of a punch?
You know, like it's kind of like the first one that landed, like, I don't really remember throwing it. Right. Cause it was like in the fray, right? Like when you get into those battles, sometimes like I was in a very reactive state, which is good because it's where I excel. But yeah, it's like, I don't remember saying throw the left, you know, it was like 2-3-2. And, I remember the three missing and I had to change that second, you know, cross to an uppercut. And, like at the, basically the moment, probably before it landed, was like, oh yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, it all happened so fast that it's like, there was no, like, there's no gauging, there was no, timing, there was no plan at that point. My brain wasn't even really picking up what was going on. It was more just like, you know, central nervous system just going. And, yeah. You know, that's, like I said, that's where I do really well. And I train to try to, you know, bring that out. You know, in the fights where guys slow me down, where we don't get into those situations is when, sometimes they beat me on points.
Yeah. Now, obviously afterwards, it was a little scary for a minute there because Jesse stayed down. Mm-hmm. He eventually got back to his feet. You know, again, this is a job. You're not out there to hurt anybody. Did you notice that right away that he stayed down for a little while and he got back up? Seemed like he was okay. Again, it's a scary moment, but that's kind of the nature of the sport.
Yeah, it is the nature of the sport, you know, and, we're both in there to hurt each other, but you don't want to like really hurt each other, you know? I think maybe there's some guys that kind of do, but, yeah, like, I'm out there to win and to, you know, to make my opponent not want to be in there with me anymore. You know, like when I make somebody tap, like that's them conceding, you know, it's like, nope, I don't want to be in here anymore. I want out. Like, somebody help me. You know, and that's when I get super pumped. You know, like, but yeah, once I kind of like walk to the opposite end of the octagon, I see he's still down. Yeah. It's like, oh boy. You know, come on, buddy. let's get up here.
Yeah. Now, certainly, listen, no one is, and I say this, like, I know it's a bad phrase to use, but no one's like dancing on the grave of a guy who gets knocked out. And I'm certainly not either. But I posted the story, I did the recap on it, and did you see the photo right after, like, you walking away and him down? I was like, that, like, again, certainly not, like, celebrating him being knocked out, but I was like, my God, like, that's, like, an iconic photo of, like, just the work being done, like, you walking away and him laying, like, that's, again, certainly not, like, it's not, I'm not meaning it as a detriment to him, of course, and he's okay, but, like, that's one of those photos where you're like, damn, like, that's just, like, we love the knockout photos, like, the rubber face photos when you catch a guy and you see the rubber face, but like that one of you just turned and walking towards the camera and him laid out, I was like, damn, like that's one of those iconic photos you put on a t-shirt.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, right, if he came in on 2 days notice and knocked me out in a similar fashion, his eye had been bugging out of his head, you know, like he would have definitely been screaming, and I'm sure everybody, you know, sitting at home would have been screaming too, you know, seeing the underdog come in and pull it off. You know, but it's you live by the sword, you die by the sword, right? So like my reaction was based off of me having been there, done that, you know, time and time again, where like I wouldn't hold it against him if like he went and was, you know, yeah, jumping over the cage and screaming and hooting and hollering and doing all that stuff if the roles had been reversed. Cause I'm listen, it's a pretty intense situation to be in, you know, coming in on your first one. And if something like that happened, I probably would have been more excited if I was that guy, you know, if I was the one making my debut. So, it's just the way it is.
100% that would be his profile photo today. If he had done that to you, 100%. That would 100% be his profile photo.
Absolutely. And there'd be no, you know, no ill will about it, right? Like it's the game we play, right? We do something that is super unforgiving. And like sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail.
Yeah. Two quick things before we talk about the future, Jim. I got to bring it up. One is during fight week when you're getting the change of opponents, you posted an Instagram video addressing it. And you're like, can people please stop messaging my wife to ask me about this now? I want to clear the air on this. I texted you during fight week and I literally opened my text and I said, I'm so sorry to bug you on fight week, because literally like I'll text you a week before the fight. I text you like 2 days after the fight. I try to never, ever text a fighter during fight week. You're cutting weight. You're doing media. Yeah. You're doing all your medicals. The last thing you want to deal with is an asshole journalist texting you about something. But to be fair, I never texted your wife. So I'm just clearing the air. That was never me. I never did that.
Yeah, no, she screenshotted it. It was, it's like some like meme page or whatever, you know, it's like low level type stuff. So, like when I say media, that's kind of what I meant, you know, but, it's just, it was funny because she actually got like, somebody was asking her like the week prior if I could do an interview. And she's like, why are they asking you? I was like, I haven't seen anything from them, you know. I mean, I'm not very good at like replying to DMs, but I thought it was funny. I was just having fun with it, you know.
Yeah, I'm making sure you know it was not me. I did not do that. I just bugged you. I just bugged you in the middle of fight week. You know, you're just in the middle of getting a new fight on 48 hours notice, whatever. Also, real quick, let's talk about the hair.
Yep.
I dig the haircut. I dig it. I dig it. The mullet is back. Like it's back in form. It is back in form. And I was like, now that, see, I can't do it. I can't. When my hair grows out longer than about where it's at right now, I lose my mind. It drives me crazy. But I was like, man, I wish I could pull it off. You pull it off, Jim. You pull off the mullet.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk about the future. You know, it's funny. When you originally mentioned, this is going back a couple of years ago, when you mentioned about like, I want to be the guy to fight a UFC 300. It was a cool thing because you did 100, 200, 300. At the time, it sounded like an abstract date. And even in my mind, I was like, man, that seems like such a long, long ways away. Like, wow, that's like, you know, I mean, good for you. You could do it. But that's like really in the future. Mm-hmm. I did the math after Saturday night. That's like March or April of next year. We're less than a year away from that. Like, did you realize that? Because that was like your date. Like, you wanted to make it till then. Jim, I got to be honest with you. The way you looked on Saturday night and the way you've looked in your recent fights, I'm not telling you what to do, but you look like you can fight well beyond UFC 300.
Yeah, you know, I thought the same thing, right? Like the same exact thing. I was like, back in the day, a couple of years ago, it was like, yeah, okay. That's far enough away. It was a couple of years. I think it was probably like 2020 when I mentioned it. We're looking at like 3 years ago. I feel good. I'm performing well. I definitely still want to fight on the card, you know, and like, I just don't know yet. I just don't know if it'll be the last one yet. Cause the thing of it is, right, is like, I want to go out knowing that fight that I'm walking to is going to be my last time. Right. That's kind of the biggest thing to me is that I want to be preparing for my final MMA fight. I want to be walking to my final MMA knowing that it's my final MMA fight. Because like that puts me in that like nothing to lose realm, right? Like there's nothing to hold back for. Like it gets me excited thinking about that. But yeah, like you said, it's probably only like March or April. if it was July, like, yeah, well, then we get another fight in there, you know, maybe like we'll see how it goes. It's another fight. It's another camp. It's another bunch of opportunities to get hurt, right? Where it is now with the pace of fights, you know, like. Getting like maybe what 5 months or so. It's like two more fights. So I don't know if that's gonna be enough.
Well, I like that attitude also because you know as well as I do, like a lot of guys they have like an emotional fight, maybe a tough loss or even mm-hmm. a big win, and they retire afterwards in the emotional moment. And then inevitably 6 months later, a year later, they're coming back because they're like, I didn't really go out the way I wanted to, whatever. I like the idea that you go in saying, this is it. I'm this is my last fight. And you know it going mm-hmm. in because then you really can leave it all in there, right? Like you leave it all in cage and you know going into it. And also, I've heard this before, some fighters who have declared that they say it also puts me. It puts it back on me to live up to my commitment. Like I've told my family I'm going to retire. I've told my kids, whatever. So they know. Like now, if I break that promise, I'm breaking it to them too. You know, going in. So I imagine I don't know if there's any part of that, but like it's also that, right? Like you go in knowing, like, okay, I've made promises. I'm going out on this fight. This is it, and that's going to be the day.
Yeah. You know, like I'm a stubborn guy, believe it or not, right? So like. I'm not going to be the type that that retires and comes back. You know, like my goal is to be able to put the energy that I put into fighting into other stuff, into, you know, to the next thing. And I'm excited for that. I really am. I just don't know if, you know, what another 11 months is enough for me.
Yeah.
Like I'm still addicted. I'm still addicted to the feeling during the warm up for this last one, it was like I was thinking like, man, like I might only be doing this for another like year or so. I was like, I'm going to miss this shit. And, you know, like I find myself in the back and I'm like, you know, like when I was a young fighter, man, and probably my first, like, I don't know, dozen or so, 15 in the UFC, like I used to get myself like super fired up. And like, I'm just like sitting down in the chair, just like smiling, you know, just like, Like, this is watching other guys warm up and stuff, and like, this is cool as shit. You know, like, I get to do this, you know, as a living, and I've been able to do this so many times. And yeah, I was just like, you fucking shit eating grin, you know? And like, just like, now it's like, okay, well, it's easy for me, or easier for me, to like, to turn that on, right? To get into that zone when I'm fighting. So I don't need to like get myself super excited, because that switch turns on a lot easier. So like, I can be having fun. I could be enjoying the process, and you know, really soaking it all in, and still go out and perform, which is cool as shit. Like, it really
Absolutely.
is, because it was like, you know, like, there were benefits to fighting like a madman. There really were, you know, but there were also like negatives to it, in that, like, I mean, I've always gotten like bad tunnel vision. Like, I even during the COVID days of no fans and stuff like that, I could barely hear my corner. I just hear like static in my ears. That's really it. Like, when I would get super pumped up, it was even worse. And like, guys would be, you know, beating me. Like, they had the game plan, and I wouldn't adapt. I wouldn't change to what was happening. Where now it's like, okay, like, what's happening? What's I'm seeing more. Adapting to changes more, and yeah, just like, a lot looser, and I feel like I'm a lot more dangerous when I'm loose.
Yeah, absolutely. To that point, you mentioned UFC 300. Like, so there's a, like, again, nothing's set in stone in terms of that being your last fight. So there's a chance you go beyond that. Is there a good chance UFC 300 would be your next fight, though? Just as you said, because of the risk of, if you fight in October, November, maybe you get an injury, and then March or April comes around and you can't fight. Like, is ideally, and again, we know how, I know how you are. I know if Sean Shelby calls you, there's a good chance you're going to say, yeah, you just fought 23 seconds. But is there a chance that UFC 300 would be your next fight?
Absolutely not. No.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to get another one by the end of the year. You know, I didn't get to this point by being conservative. You know, I didn't have this career by being conservative. And you know, I misspoke. Somebody called, I, you know, somebody called it, pointed it out, at the post fight. I want to finish my career like how I started my career, which is being active, and, you know, anybody I can. So, yeah, like, that's my goal isn't to just sit it out, because honestly, like, training camps are hard. You know, they're always dangerous. They always have been dangerous. Like, we skirt the edge, you know. Like, you gotta basically get into fights every week. I hurt myself now doing stupid stuff, like, just absolutely stupid stuff. Like, I back in December, I partially tore my patellar tendon in my left knee. Bending over to pick up a little piece of a, you know, the corner of a wrapper from like a granola bar or something like that in the kitchen. You know, like, I bent over, and it was like, bang. And I was like, oh shit. Like, you know, I had to walk it off. And like, so then I spent the next 7 weeks of a training camp, like, being super protective of my knees. 'Cause of course I hurt my left one. So then my right one's like, no, I'm gonna hurt worse. Because that's the way my body works these days. Once I start compensating, then the other side hurts even worse. So, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I could sit on the shelf, you know, and say, hey, I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna wrap myself in bubble wrap and not fight until 300, and I could hurt myself bending over in the garden, or you know, or like stubbing my toe, or something like that. Like, it's just we are at that point, you know. Like, we are at that point that I can hurt myself doing stupid stuff, and I'm actually like safer when I am going hard, because I that's when I put the, you know, I put the armor on. I'm protecting myself. And like that's even like sparring and stuff like that and rolling. Like when I have had these little injuries, in the last couple of years, it's always something stupid. It's not like somebody rips on an arm bar or something like that. No, it's like I'm sparring, I circle or whatever, and I step off the mat, and it's like, you just like tweaked a ligament in your foot. Like what the hell? Like because you stepped an extra inch and a half. It's the silly stuff. So I'm definitely not going to try to put myself into that padded room and protect myself because I'd probably hurt myself in there. So.
I forgot to ask going into the fight. It didn't even really occur to me because you had done that post after the fight with Alexander Hernandez. So the eye's okay, because I know you did that post about the eye. So the eye's okay, like, because that was when you posted that. I was gonna text you, but you posted that. Just like, you don't need to hear from me at that point. But it was kind of scary when you made that post. I was like, damn, that is, because we all know, obviously, everyone knows the story of Michael Bisping. Like, that's probably the most famous one when you deal with eye injuries. And Alan Belcher's another one where he had an eye poke and it dramatically changed his career. So when you posted that, I was like, damn, like that's serious. But it seems like the eye's okay, obviously.
Really, really like trippy. So I went, saw specialists, stuff like that. I had two doctors tell me my vision wasn't going to get any better. And at the point where I was, in like a week or two after the fight, like shit was pretty blurry. Like it was, like eye has always been like my really good eye. I took an eye poke in the left eye in 2018 that kind of affected that a little bit. But my right eye, I'm right eye dominant. It's always been super sharp, 20/20. And so like my vision was always kind of favoring my right side. And for the first like month or so, I mean, looking at my phone, I'd see double vision. It was like hard to read stuff. And I was thinking well, I could see somebody in front of me, right? And that's why I was talking to some of the doctors, and I'm like, and the fight docs, stuff like that. And I was like, I can still fight. Like, 'cause I don't need to, it's not like I'm reading, signs on the highway at 200 miles an hour. Like I don't need to, I don't need to read small shapes quickly when it's in a fight. I just need to see somebody's fist or leg coming at my head, right? Which I could have done, but I was like, I don't know if I want to like live my day to day like this. Like this is kind of crazy. So I started, asking about like, cataract surgery. So what they end up doing is they go in and they replace the lens in your eye. So what ended up happening is the poke hit me in the corner of the eye, and I guess like the sharp wave of the fluid in my eye, it just kind of must have like buckled my lens a little bit. So there's a blurry spot in the lens in my eye. So like it's not the focus or anything like that, right? So it'll always be a blurry spot. So with the surgery is super straightforward. They go in, they cut your eye open, they replace the lens with an artificial one, and recovery is like a couple weeks, and bada bing bada boom, you're good to go. But I was told that if I replaced the, got a lens replacement, that there was the possibility that some of the commissions wouldn't sanction me, because if that lens came loose from a strike, that the lens could then cause more damage to the inside of my eye, and then I, end up potentially being like Bisping, and losing the eye. So I went down the rabbit hole. Thank you to Nick Lembo of New Jersey Athletic Commission. Like, he helped me out a lot here, talking to doctors and stuff like that. And I mean, at this point, doctors are kind of like, they're super confident in the surgeries. I mean, when I started fighting, if you detached a retina, you were done. Like, they could repair it, but you were never fighting again. And nowadays, there's quite a few fighters that have had, retinal reattachments and come back at relatively in a short time span. So like some you know, the doctors at that at this point kind of believe that, like, if something like that did happen, right, I get poked, the lens comes loose, or poked or struck, right, just getting hit could make the lens come loose potentially, that they wouldn't even know if it was because of the surgery or not. So I was kind of like weighing it out, like, hey, what do I do? And then it was probably like 5 weeks after the fight. Like, it honestly felt like, literally I woke up the one day and I was like, oh shit, things aren't blurry anymore, you know? And like, I think it just took a little bit of time, for my brain to kind of adapt and maybe switch a little bit of the focus onto my left eye as well. And, you know, like, maybe my brain is kind of seeing around the blurry spot type stuff. Like, but it's not 2020 anymore, but like, in order to not get sanctioned, you have to be pretty much blind. So I'm definitely not blind. Like, we're working with like maybe like a 20/40. So like, yeah, it's the injury is there. And I, you know, post fighting, I'll probably get it fixed, but for the time being, it is fine. It is absolutely fine.
Yeah. And here's the real question about that. Can you still aim with the gun or the bow?
Yes. Once it kind of came back, that as messed up as it is, that was like, well, I could see somebody standing in front of me, but can I shoot a bow? You know, like, that was like, yeah, that was something that I was honestly a little bit concerned about. Yeah, fortunately it's gotten good enough to where, you know, I can do those things.
Well, that's obviously important, and I'm glad that's okay. Real quick, yeah. Jim, before I get you out of here, I know you've never been like a call out guy or like, mm-hmm. Let's have this fight, that fight. I don't know. Did you see my tweet on Saturday night? The suggestion I threw out there for your next fight? Because
we were doing our
post fight show, and we were talking about your win, and I said, listen, you know, it would actually, in a way, break my heart for this fight to happen because I have so much respect for you. And I love the legend fights. I love when we get to see two mm-hmm. legends go at it. And there's only so many guys in that category, right? Like, there's only so many mm-hmm. veterans that have been around. You said welterweight. And immediately I was like, yeah. How about the all-time wins leader versus the all-time knockout leader, Jim Miller versus Matt Brown? Now, if you don't know, Matt Brown normally co-hosts my podcast with me.
Yeah.
I know Matt has absolutely the utmost respect for you. You know, there's absolutely, and when I said that, I was like, kind of breaks my heart to suggest this, because that would be one where I would literally just have to sit in the middle and not react, because I have so much tremendous respect amount for you, and I've known you for so long. Matt does my podcast with me. I've known Matt for years. Like, I kind of hate it, but I was also kind of like, that's kind of like the perfect fight in a way. Like, that's the kind of fight I think you two should have. So I don't know. Again, I know you're not the call out guy, but in that's like, mm-hmm. if that suggestion, like, am I wrong in thinking that actually would be a really fun fight?
I think it would be a fun fight. Yeah. You know, Matt is he's a absolute fan favorite. You know, I love watching him fight. You know, we fought on a local card here in Jersey together. When was that? 2006?
Was that Atlantic City?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it was some school gym.
Oh, that was way before UFC.
Yeah. So like, I've known about Matt, you know, for quite some time. Yeah, and that'd be an awesome one. That'd be an awesome one for 300.
That somebody said that on Twitter when I put it out there. Yeah. Like, that should be the opening pay per view fight at UFC 300. You and Matt Brown. Yeah. I was like, oh man, that really is a good idea. I was like, damn, I wish I had thought of that part of it, because I was like, really, that would be iconic for you guys to fight at UFC 300.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that's a fight that I get excited about. You know, and like, there's something fun about like fighting up at 72, you know, like, I mean, just the difference that I felt in like fight week for that last Cerrone fight was it was awesome. It was awesome to like not really be worried about weight. And when I stepped into the octagon, I felt like I mean, I felt like I had all the energy, so like it kind of bugged me because it's like, man, like why the hell do I cut to 55? Like, why do I put myself through this? Like, why do we do this shit? But yeah, no, that'd be a fun one.
I told it's funny when Matt got matched up with Court McGee, he's just like, dude, I love Court, great guy. We've been around each other, like really, really good dude. But you know, it's a fight, it's a business, but it's a great fight. And I said the same thing here. Like when you fought Cerrone, like technically that was a rematch. You were getting, you know, revenge or whatever. But I know I talked to you before that fight. You're like, ah, you know, it's just a fun fight and I like it. And you and Donald were totally cool with each other. And like, obviously it was his last fight. And like that, if you're going to go out on, and again, we don't know if UFC 300 is going to be the last one for you or matter for anybody. But like, I was glad that Cerrone got to go out against a guy like you versus just some other, you know, just some guy. Like I bring this up all the time. I still get sad when I think about Shogun, who his last fight against a guy named Ihor Pateri, and that's nothing against him. It's just like that's not the, like if he lost to Lyoto Machida or they brought back Little Nog or whatever, one of those iconic fights. Like, okay, that's the way you want to see Shogun. He's going to go out, let him go out like that. You know, and I'm not, again, I don't know if UFC 300 is going to be it, but like you and Matt, like that's like, again, there's only so many of those matchups you can make these days. That was one where I was like, man, that's just perfect. Like, I listen, tell Sean Shelby he can take the day off. I just did his job for him.
There we go.
Yeah, I just think it's a great match. And again, I think it's just fun. Like, why not? Again, because you took Ludovic Klein, you took Jared Gordon, you took Jesse Butler. We know you're going to take, you know, whoever they throw at you. But again, I think there's some iconically. I thought I know he already got matched up. I think he's fighting in July. But I was like, you know, you and Tony Ferguson, that's another one. I was like, there's a legend fight that would be a lot of fun if he's around. Like, that's another one. I think, like, again, I know you're going to fight whoever. But I'm like, man, those are kind of fights, like those iconic fights between the two legends.
Yeah. No, they're awesome. Like fighting, you know, the second Cerrone fight, or like Clay, like when I fought Clay, man, it might've been that it was Jersey too. Yeah. It was like, man, I was just vibing. I was vibing walking to the octagon. Like, man, like this is awesome. Like, I was like, we should have fought years ago. And it's like, here we are now, you know? Yeah. So those fights are awesome. They're fun. They're amazing to be a part of. So yeah, hopefully I get a few more of those you know, these young unknown kids, man, sometimes they make me nervous. like, you know, I mean, Matt Brown makes me nervous, but in a different way, right? Because it's like, I know what he's going to do. Like, he's going to hit me really hard. So it's like, okay, you know, like, at least I know what to expect, you know? But, yeah, it's cool to, it's cool to be a part of those fights, and it's cool to like, be associated with some of the guys that I've been able to be associated with, you know? It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you said many times the records, you're not one who really pays attention to things like that. But as I said, like, it's just, again, if you're going to do two or three, four more, whatever the number ends up being, like, again, you've already got the all-time wins record. And we know how hard that is. We just saw Andrei Arlovsky, a guy who's a couple wins behind you. Like, it's not easy to do it at this level for that long. You know, he had a tough loss on Saturday night as well. Add a couple more on there. And like I said, if you're going to add a couple more onto the resume, why not add guys like Tony Ferguson or Matt Brown or as you did with, you know, Donald Cerrone? Again, I know you're going to take what they throw at you, but like I said, like you said, Clay Guida, I remember we talked when we did the interview with the Clay Guida fight. I was like, how have you guys not fought before? Yeah. Like, how has this not happened? That's the kind of feeling I get. Like, when Matt fought Carlos Condit, I was like, okay, like, we don't need to say anything. This is just two legends fighting and whatever. And, like, those are the kind of fights I get up for. And, like I said, I think that would be awesome. Like, I don't know how many fights you have left, but, like, it would be cool if these last three or four, whatever the number ends up being, would be those kind of fights.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Well, Jim, it is always a pleasure to catch up with you, man. Enjoy the victory. I know you're not a guy to sit around and celebrate and pat yourself on the back, but it was an incredible win, man. 23-second knockout. Couldn't have gone any better. I'm sure we'll talk when the next one gets made. Try not to stub your toe on the way out of the interview. And I appreciate the time as always, man. I really do. And thank you for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Absolutely. Talk soon.
Have a good one.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.